Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 12. Beyond renunciation and knowledge, text number 7. Tenadita Shruti Gana,
Tenadita Shruti Gana,
Nupasita Mahatma,
Nupasita Mahatma.
Avratta Tapta Tapasa, Matsangamam Upagata, Tinadita Shruti Gana,
Tinadita Shruti Gana,
Nupasita Mahatma,
Nupasita Mahatma,
Avratta Tapta Tapasa, Matsangamam Upagata, Tenadita Shruti Gana,
Tenadita Shruti Gana,
Nupasita Mahatma,
Nupasita Mahatma,
Avratta Tapta Tapasa,
Avratta Tapta Tapasa,
Matsangamam Upagata,
Matsangamam Upagata,
Te,
They,
Na,
Not.
Adita,
Adita,
having studied,
Shruti
Gana,
the Vedic literatures,
Na,
not.
Upasita, having worshipped,
Mahatma,
great saints,
Avratta,
without vows,
Atapta,
not having undergone,
Tapasa,
austerities,
Matsanga,
simply by association with me,
and my devotees,
Ma,
me,
Upagataha,
they achieve.
Translation. The persons I have mentioned did not undergo serious studies of the Vedic literature, nor did they worship great saintly persons, nor did they execute severe vows or austerities. Simply by association with me and my devotees, they achieved me. Purport. Study of the Vedic literature, worship of those who teach the Shruti mantras, acceptance of vows and austerities, etc., as mentioned previously, are helpful processes that please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this verse, however, the Lord again explains that all such processes are secondary to the essential process of associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His pure devotees. By other processes, one may gain the association of the Lord and His devotees, which will actually give the perfection of life. The word matsangat can also be read as satsangat, with the same meaning. In the reading, matsangat, from association with me, mat is also understood to indicate those who are mine, or the devotees. Srila Sridhar Swami mentions that a pure devotee can advance in Krishna consciousness by his own association, since simply by associating with his own activities and consciousness, he associates with the Lord. Like Srila Prabhupada. Om Gyanati Manandasya Ganandana Salakaya Chaksuran Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamayam Radhati Swaparantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sita Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Prajna Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Visakhandita He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namaskute Tapta Kansham Gorami Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishavanam Sutadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpadruvyacha Sakripa Sindhuvyacha Paditanam Pavanevyo Vaisnavevyo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasani Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So this chapter is called Beyond Renunciation and Knowledge. We are speaking of bhakti, but bhakti of course includes renunciation and knowledge. It is not that there is no renunciation in bhakti. But when we speak of beyond renunciation and knowledge, we are speaking about separate renunciation. Renunciation alone, what benefit will it give us? Simply by fasting, will we get the mercy of Krishna? Simply by giving up the world? No. By embracing devotional service to Krishna, that is how we will get the mercy of Krishna. But within the course of that service, there is so much to renounce. Within the course of devotional service of Krishna, we have to give up so many things, but not separate renunciation. It's not he who is the greatest jagi, he who eats less than everyone else, he who sleeps less than anyone else, will he please Krishna the most? No. The devotee who is preaching my glories, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he is Priya Kriptama. He is the most dear to me. He is the most dear to me. Yes. Glorifying Krishna publicly, that remains the activity that attains the most mercy of Krishna. So austerity will be there in any activity. Whatever you want to do, we know it, there is austerity. If you want to become learned in a university, so much austerity. If you want to become famous, so much austerity. So austerity is there in every aspect of life. To be a mother, inconceivable austerity. Like that, everyone performs this austerity. It comes on its own accord. So in devotional service, when we try to please Krishna, there is plenty of austerity. Plenty. It's not that it's so easy. Because it's not easy to deal with the material energy. And we are serving Krishna right now with a material body. And through this material body, we are working with the material energy. That's all that we have right now under our control. And therefore, if we want to serve Krishna, we do it through the material energy, either through our material body or through the material energy outside of us. And it's always difficult to work with the material body because it has so many limitations. We see it when we were a child, then we have lots of energy, but we're always too small and nothing is allowed. Right? Nothing. Everything always restricted. You're too young for this. No, you can't do that. No, you can't do this. Finally, we are old enough. And then we think, yes, now I will enjoy. But then is also the time that you have to prepare for your future. So when you're young, when you're beautiful, when you still have the strength of youth, that's the time you have to sacrifice for your future. And if you don't, you will suffer in the future. Says, yeah, but I want to, I'm young now, I want to enjoy now. No, no. Now you must prepare very hard, study very hard, work very hard for your future. In this way, in any condition of life, it is difficult. Then when things move on, then very soon we'll be too old, over the hill, so to speak. Just like now, I am a sannyasi. Now I can have a feast every day. Every day. I can get anything I want to eat. Anything, right? I can have 10 people cooking for me a huge feast. But I have one problem. I can't digest anything. Yes, this is the situation. Once on an airport, I saw a man with a t-shirt. Right? And the t-shirt said, heard it all, seen it all, done it all, but I can't remember it all. It was an old man. So I went up to him and said, great shirt, really good. I said, where did you get it? He said, I made it myself. I said, congratulations. Well done, well done. He really figured it out, you know. This is how it is. Heard it all, done it all, seen it all, but can't remember it all. I came in a temple, in a German temple some years ago, and they had a Russian clown for the Sunday feast. Whoa, from the Russian state circus, yes. And he was expert in spinning balls. He had balls spinning on his fingers, balls spinning on his toes, and he had one spinning on a stick on his nose. So it certainly was impressive and a good clown. What it had to do with Krishna consciousness, I don't know. No idea. But after that, it was my turn to speak, and then I was thinking that, well, let me take some inspiration from this clown. So there is the stream of opportunities called life. And this stream of opportunities is just moving along. And when you're young, you're playful, you pick out some opportunities, you bounce them around here and there, spin them around. No problem at all. Yes, you can play with things. 3-4 opportunities at the same time. But as time moves on, you become a little more purposeful. Then, whenever there's a good one, you got it. Next, guide. And time moves along. And then, you know, every once in a while, the opportunities keep on going, and it's a good one. But anyway, let it go. It's not that good. It's not that good. Let it go. And then, in the end, there were two old people sitting on a bench, looking at the stream of opportunities. And one was saying to the other one,
that's a good one.
And that's about it. So life is like that. The opportunities are going by very quickly. And with time, it becomes more and more difficult to avail of these opportunities. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj mentioned it. Now, when we are young, now we should apply ourselves to Krishna consciousness. That is the case. Don't wait till you're old and senile and half blind and until your back doesn't work and like, until you really can't get up in the morning. Now we may be lying in our bed and the alarm clock goes
beep 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 beep.
I can't get up. But it's only the mind. It's just the mind. Body can still do it. Yes, if we want to. If somebody says, if you get it right now, I'll give you $100, we bounce off the bed really fast. No problem. But a time will come that it will really be difficult. Sorry.
You're sitting. Oh, God, I'm sitting. Oh, leg over the edge of the bed. Oh, yes, three people to help and lift you up.
Huh? I saw one old Gaudiya Vaishnava who came to our temple, the Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan. And he had four brahmacharis who were helping him to pay obeisances. And he paid obeisances first in front of Prabhupada, and then in front of all the three altars, and it took like 45 minutes to get him up and down. And four brahmacharis were really working, you know. Wasn't easy. This is the situation. So, old age is difficult. So austerities naturally are built into material existence. That we cannot avoid. So Vaishnavas are not looking for separate austerities. We're not looking. We're not impressed if someone becomes Hari Phal Baba. Hari Phal Baba, he never eats only fruits. Only fruits. Very good, very good. Yes. Only. Oh yes, for 27 years he's eaten only fruits. Oh, oh, oh. Very advanced. No, that doesn't give you Krishna Bhakti. No. But if you have taken for 27 years only Mahabhasaram, yes, then you'll get Krishna Bhakti. If we are connected to Krishna, if we are serving Krishna, so it is about seva. What sacrifice are we going to make for Krishna? Srila Prabhupada designed this movement so that we could engage in devotional service. There are many opportunities. So in a way he made it easy for us. We connect. We just connect with this movement, and then there is devotional service. And it is a fact that to simply maintain what is going on is not so easy. One thing in Melbourne is that they have maintained the tradition of having three pujaris for the artis. That's not a small thing. No, that is not a small thing. In India, maybe, we see. In our Krishna Balaram Mandir, we see it. But in so many temples, three altars, one pujari. He starts at altar number one, he walks to altar number two, three, or sometimes just to all the three deities on one altar. That's it. Because it's not so easy. I came to one society, one famous Hindu society. I won't say which one, but you can guess. And they said, oh yes, Swamiji, in our society for 37 years now, every Purnima we have changed the dress of the deities. They were very proud. We and the ISKCON devotees go, ooh. Only on Purnima. Poor Krishna, right? Not Purnima, poor Krishna. I mean, all the time wearing the same clothes covered in dust. Here, they change the dress twice a day. That is a standard, because Krishna is a person. We see in Vrindavan, in the winter, we see how Krishna has socks. Because it's very cold, Vrindavan. Yes. So Krishna sucks, because Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. It's not one deity. Oh yes, I am here expressing my bhakti. Yes. My bhakti is there, and today I am dressing the deities. Yes. So I am covering the deity in flowers, putting this all over its face so that we cannot even see. And I like it when Krishna has his arm exposed. Yes, but it's freezing cold. That's not the mood of a servant. That is the mood of an enjoyer. How difficult it is to serve Krishna. Because all along we are enjoying ourselves. Look at me. Look how I am serving. Oh, I'm serving. Has everyone noticed it? Yes. Look how I am bowing down before Krishna. Have you seen? Yes, special style. So everyone can see. Yes. So we are trying to draw the attention to ourselves. But to actually be a servant is very difficult. To not claim any fame, to simply just give all our energy for the pleasure of the Lord. And to think, what is his need? He is a person. We see in the Radharaman temple in Vrindavan, Radharaman is a very small deity. So therefore he has his own prasadam room. Because he's so small, they carry him to his prasadam room. And then in the winter, they serve him nice hot khichdi. Because who doesn't like nice hot khichdi when it's cold? Little ghee on top. Nice for breakfast, yes. Steaming hot khichdi, cold outside. Yes, everybody likes. Krishna also likes. So they offer him like that, according to the seasons. According to the seasons. In the hot season, the Lord has water sports. That is natural. So we must serve Krishna according to his needs. He is a person. To be a servant. In the Nectar of Devotion, we find that it is described that devotional service is performed in different moods, in different mellows, or different rasas. It is said that the gopis are serving Krishna in the conjugal mood, the Nanda and Yasoda and their associates are serving Krishna in Vatsalya, the parental mood. Then there is Sridham who wants to fight with Krishna and show that he is more powerful. Who does Krishna think he is? I will defeat him. The cowherd boys. Then we see that there are servants who are assisting Krishna. And finally, there are those who are in the neutral mood. Right? So it is described that there are these five different moods in which Krishna is served. He said, but all these moods are based on one principle, dasyam. The maybe or servitorship. The mood of dasyam may be different in each one of them, but servitorship is the principle. Nanda Maharaj is acting like Krishna's father, and he's telling Krishna, bring my shoes. And Krishna brings the shoes of his father on his head. So it seems that Krishna is serving, but the fact is Nanda Maharaj is serving Krishna because he's always thinking of Krishna. 100%, always busy with his son, making arrangements for his son. So Nanda Maharaj is serving. Now, it is said, therefore, in the Nectar of Devotion, it is mentioned that all service is based on the principle of dasyam, or that service attitude, all these relationships. It said, and dasyam can be divided in two types of servitorship. It said, one is a general type of servitorship, and the other is the mood of a personal attendant. So I want to focus for a moment on that, the mood of the personal attendant. Because, yes, we can serve Krishna in a general way, that is like, well, chup chup. hey, bacha, chup chup. Otherwise, I'm sending you out with your father. And then he has to watch it with his camera, webcam outside. Oh, it's very difficult to concentrate, you see. It's him or me that gives a lecture. I can't do both. You have to forgive me, but... So that mood of the personal attendant. Personal attendant means that we serve Krishna according to his needs. If you're a personal attendant, then you look at what is the need. If we serve Krishna in a general way, then we think like, well, whatever is allowed in devotional service, I will do that. Right? But personal attendants say, no, We can offer Krishna milk, water, or lemon juice, but which one is the appropriate one right now? According to the time of day, according to the season, according to the situation, a different offering is appropriate. So the personal attendant, he is always thinking like that. What is Krishna's need? He's not thinking of what am I allowed to do for Krishna. Just like we can take it very far, you know, we can just say, well, let's read the label. Read the label. Is it bona fide? Yes, it's bona fide. Okay, then we can have it. Yeah? That's one approach. The other approach is that, yes, but has it been cooked with, prepared, has it been prepared with love and devotion? Because otherwise, has Krishna really accepted it? What kind of potency is in that prasad? When Mother Sachi, after Nimai had taken sannyas, then Mother Sachi had one last meeting with Nimai in Advaita Acharya's house. And that meeting went on for 1 week. And during that week, she cooked for him. And whatever she cooked then, she had never cooked like that before, because she knew this is the last time I'm ever going to cook for him. He said, never again. So she put everything in there. I mean, all her bhakti, she tried to make it like the best of the best. Right? Every preparation had all her devotion inside. Then it was offered to the Lord. And when the devotees were taking those remnants, they never tasted such prasad. They never ever had such prasad. They rolled on the floor in ecstasy. So, you know what I mean? There is prasad and prasad. Yeah? I mean, prasad is not prasad, if you know what I mean. But there is prasad and prasad. Right? You got that? Yes. So, because Krishna is not a prasadam machine, you know, you just put anything. Is it vegetarian? Yes, it is. All right, then it can be offered to Krishna. Put it in front of him. Oh yes, ring the bell. Ding, ding, ding. Right, and come back in a few minutes and clap your hands, and there it is. Hocus pocus. Another joke. Huh? One time we went for a program in India in someone's house, and one devotee was doing the offering. And he had the people, they brought the plate, they had cooked. They brought the plate, they put it down. And then he had two people stand with a chadar. And then from behind the chadar, he lit a whole bundle of incense. And so much smoke came from behind that chadar. And the people were thinking, wow, this is really prasad. There was so much smoke. Huh? But it has nothing to do with how much smoke. That is just a smoke screen. We should not become bewildered by these external things. It's not how loud you ring the bell, or how big the bell is, or how many mantras you chant. You know, that doesn't make the prasada more potent. Someone chants so many mantras, oh, this must be very powerful prasada. Nah. Even if somebody doesn't know the proper mantras and just says Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, but he offers with devotion, Krishna will accept it. Krishna will accept. But when it is offered with love and devotion, then that prasadam is accepted by Krishna also with love and devotion. If it's something from the supermarket and it is all vegetarian, Krishna looks at it, okay, yeah. Maybe he'll put one finger in the prep just to be merciful. Okay. Next prep. Ah, that's been cooked by my devotee. Yeah, look at that. Yes. Oh, very nice. That one, Krishna will eat the whole bowl, you see. So it's not the same. We have to understand. So in the same way, giving the example of prasadam, all service is like that. If we think, well, I'll do the service for Krishna that I like to do. I do the service that I like to do. That's not the same as doing the needful for Krishna, as doing what Krishna really needs, what Krishna really, what is the best for Krishna. So the highest service is that service which Krishna requires. And that's not so easy. That is where we make a sacrifice. That is where we have to renounce. Where we have to renounce our own ideas for Krishna. Just like a mother has to renounce, or parents have to renounce for a child. You have to go out of the lecture sometimes, what can be done. Or you see like a plate of prasadam, and there is a nice piece of pizza, and then there's on the plate of the parents, and suddenly the child comes, put a little hand in there and steals that pizza. But the parents say, oh no, here you take, like that. So the austerity has to be performed, the renunciation, you have to renounce your pizza on the spot, right? For your child. So renunciation comes in such relationships. And for Krishna, we also renounce. We renounce so many things. Yes, first it's clear. No meat, fish or eggs, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. That's easy. Very easy, because it's clear. It's yes or no. You know, am I following three principles or four? It's clear. That's clear. Am I chanting 16 rounds or 10 or 12 or 11 or what? It's clear, it's measurable. But once that initial part in devotional service is there, and once we are actually following those standards, then comes the difficult part. Because then we have to develop the qualities of a pure devotee. Then we have to be ready to make sacrifice for Krishna. That's where it becomes difficult. It's not just a matter of being here. Actually, the four regulative principles, Srila Prabhupada explained, is where human life begins. Anyone who doesn't follow four regulative principles is an animal. Sorry to say it. I mean, there may be some in the room. Some such animals may be here. Anyway, it is possible to come to the human form of life very quickly by accepting the four regulative principles. But as long as we are not, we are simply an animal, actually. We're on the animal platform. So it's nothing spiritually exalted, four regulative principles. It is just where human life begins. It is not even an expression of bhakti. No fish, meat or eggs, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. Doesn't mean we haven't reached the platform of devotional service yet. It just means we stopped being an animal, that's all. And we just became human, but we didn't do anything for Krishna yet. Then from that platform, that human platform, we have to begin to do some service. Roll up the sleeves and let's get into it. Let's do something now. Yes. But in chanting Hare Krishna, yes, we begin devotional service. So in this way, we see that the four regulative principles are only the preliminaries. They must be there, and then we start chanting Hare Krishna. Now it gets more difficult. And then when it's not only about 16 rounds, but when it is about quality, about the quality of our chanting, then it becomes more difficult. When it's about attentive chanting, then it becomes quite difficult. It seems that mantra is more slippery than a bar of soap. Sometimes, yes. The soap under the shower, try to catch it. This mantra is so hard. The mind just goes everywhere and anywhere. We seem to have unlimited capacity to go all over the universe and to fix our mind on anything except on the Maha Mantra. It's just amazing. Amazing. We can easily concentrate on all kinds of things for hours, but when it comes to chanting Hare Krishna, so hard to fix the mind. So hard. Of course, with time, automatically, With time in devotional service, our relationship with the Holy Name also changes. When I first came in contact with the Holy Name, at that time I was a musician, and I was playing guitar and singing, and I had been in India. So as a result, I had learned a few ragas. And then I met this piano player, and he also played ragas. So we had a jam session on a stage with some drummers, lots of percussion actually, and we were doing ragas, and him on piano and me on guitar. And his name was Burton Green. And then after a while, he said, let's do some mantra. I said, yeah, why not? Raga, mantra, it's all spiritual sound from India, so let's do it. Right? So then he started chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And we were, and I was singing and playing along. And I was just thinking, yes, ragas, mantras, all spiritual sound. As far as I knew, the mantra was sound. That's all I knew. I had, later, when I got to know Krishna better, then I immediately, as soon as someone says Krishna, I saw a picture of Krishna also. Yellow dhoti, flute, peacock feather, automatically, Krishna, boom, peacock feather. Immediately, you see, as we are getting more experience. If here I say Krishna, everyone has a picture of Krishna in front of his eyes. And with time, even more. Krishna, lifter of Govardhan Hill, right? Krishna, maybe you think of Putana, right? Like this. With time, we know more and more about Krishna. But in the time when that piano player first introduced me to the Holy Name, his name was Burton Green. Yes. And later, I read the Prabhupada Lilamrita, and then I read that during the early days in the matchless gift storefront in New York, there the devotees had one day found the string board of an old piano at the garbage, and they brought it to the temple. And sometimes during the kirtan, they would play on it. And one piano player especially would play on those strings, and his name was Burton Green. And I said, Burton Green? Mahamantra. So I got it in the simple succession from Prabhupada. Just see. I never knew. But I found out in due course of time. But with time, I first thought the mantra was just spiritual sound. Later I understood that the mantra is more. Later I understood the mantra is non-different from Krishna, at least theoretically I understood. And then I began to understand a little more who Krishna was. And with time, I begin to find out more and more about Krishna. So hearing about Krishna helps us to go deeper in our chanting. The two go hand in hand. Sravanam, Kirtanam, they go hand in hand. And then with that comes remembering of Krishna. Therefore it is said that the Bhagavad Vidhi, or the Bhagavad Mark, the path of the Bhagavad, the path of which actually is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was teaching, the Bhagavad Mark, is the path of hearing, chanting, and remembering. And by hearing, chanting, and remembering, we become more and more absorbed in Krishna. And then we can get into that mood of becoming the personal attendant of Krishna. Otherwise, we'll never do it. Otherwise, we'll quickly come, say our prayer, and quickly run out, and just quickly come and grab some prasada, and our devotional service will not develop. It will just go very slow. Little progress, but only little. The essence of it all is hearing about Krishna. Because the more we hear about Krishna, our understanding of Krishna increases, and with it, our appreciation for Krishna increases. The goal, what is the goal of life?
Prema Martam.
Oh, he has been well trained. Prema. And what does it mean? Can you translate it into
love of God?
Prema Pumartha Mahan. Now, a good translation, Prema, love, Puma, man, yes, Artha, benefit, Mahan, the greatest benefit. So the ultimate benefit that man can attain is Prema. That's what it says. So that's the goal of life. All right, once we know that, once we really understand that, that's not just a small thing. This Prema Pumartha Mahan should be hanging on our wall instead of home sweet home, you know, something like that. We should have that on our wall. Or instead of buying one of these sentimental cards of a son who's expressing gratitude to his mother, you know, and again, you see that like hanging there. It is by the mercy of mother that I'm this and that. By the mercy of Krishna, right? We should appreciate Krishna. We should put the whole house full of such things. Prema Pumartha Mahan, hang it on your wall at home. Who has it on the wall? It should be in the center of our mind that the goal of life is to attain Krishna Prema. That's it. It should be our main meditation. It should come to a point where we become Prema Ruruksu, the acharyas are saying, where we are approaching praying, where we are thinking about it day and night, all the time, that we come to the point that this is what I want to attain. That should be the main thing we want to attain. You can see we are far away. So how do we get it? By regular hearing and chanting. It is especially that is the essence. But that is the service that we give the least attention. We sort of chant on automatic pilot, we chant on clickers, we ramble along. And some of us say it's just too difficult. Too difficult. I cannot do that. Then what are you doing if that is too much? Then what are we doing? Then we are wasting this human form of life. Then we will surely not rise to actually the proper behavior for a human being. Then, as most of the world population today, we will remain on the animal platform. This is actually the fact of the matter. So see, today I've taken off my gloves this morning, showing my claws, and I'm in outright attack on my audience. Right? Instead of letting everyone sit peacefully and enjoying a nice, entertaining Sunday morning class, we are getting personal. Very personal, yes. Are we actually serious? That is the question. Are we actually sincere? That is the question. Or are we cheating ourselves? And saying, oh, I'm such a great devotee. Put yourself back to sleep. Yes, yes. Put your conscience to sleep. Oh, no, I'm going to the mandir. Very good. I'm very good. I'm going to the mandir. It's not good enough. No. I'm vegetarian, strict. Not good enough. Prasadam. Yakyasistatinu santo muchante sarvakilisai. Krishna says, only yajna sista, only what is left from sacrifice. Yes. Quality. So now we need, so the first steps in Krishna consciousness are easy. They're measurable. Four regulated principles, 16 rounds. But afterwards comes the difficult part. To bring the quality in there. And that is what it's about. To make that sacrifice and to go forward. That is where the renunciation kicks in. And our knowledge, yes, knowledge we need. We need knowledge of Krishna. We need more and more knowledge about devotional service, about bhakti. That's why it says this chapter, beyond renunciation and knowledge. And we have bhakti shastris and bhakti vaibhavas, and isn't that all about knowledge? No, here we're talking about separate knowledge. Knowledge about Krishna. We need, it will help us. The more knowledge we have about Krishna, the more we will become motivated. Because our big problem is our motivation. We don't have motivation. If we would be more motivated, then we could do it. Then we could serve Krishna. But because we lack in motivation, we are weak in our motivation. Everything. Oh, I have to get up. Oh, it's so difficult. Oh, it's so early. Oh, I have to take a shower. Oh, officially cold. Oh, too cold. No, I make it warm. Oh, yes, better. Oh, I have to chant 16 rounds. Oh, so difficult. Can I chant less? Oh, maybe I should eat some Mongolic sweets in the middle. Oh, oh, a cup of tea. Oh. Thirsty. Oh, and now I have to do service in the temple. Oh, 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 and then serve Krishna. Oh, Krishna. this is our level of bhakti. Always complaining, mentally complaining. Yes, but we have to really go deeper in our spiritual life. This movement is not a social movement. If you look for a social movement, the football club is around the corner. Yes. This is not a social movement. This is a movement. We are not here just to come together and to celebrate birthday parties, although sometimes we do celebrate birthday parties. Actually, nowadays, so many birthday parties, right? In some countries, they sing, instead of happy birthday to you, they sing, may you never take birth again, and so on, right? It's going on. And it's a cake every week, sometimes 3-4 birthdays on Sundays. And again, we're cutting a cake. But this is not a movement just about cutting cakes. Oh, we can have cake, no problem, have as much cake as you like, as much cake as you can handle. As much cake as makes it still possible to chant Hare Krishna. Because too much cake, then the brain becomes cake. And then finally, a Maha Mantra becomes somewhere mushed up in between all that cream and cake. Mushy in the middle. So, in this way, it's not so easy, bhakti. This movement is for pure devotional service. Yes, you didn't know what you got into. But it's a bit late now. It's a bit late now to give up. We went so far. Now it's time to go. But the funny thing is that we go so far. Right? We go so far. We put tilak on our nose. We put neck beads. We put devotional clothes. We put the bead back around our neck, and we even chant Hare Krishna. And then, but it is as if we are standing on the edge of a swimming pool, put our toe inside, but we are not jumping in the water. We're still not doing it. We're still not getting serious about spiritual life and giving it our best, our everything. We don't jump out of bed with the same enthusiasm as we would for that $100 bill. We still would be more into, if I'd say anybody who jumps the highest in the kirtan will now get this little iPod. See how high how everyone jumps. If we say anyone who can touch one of those chandeliers, will get an iPhone. that would be, people would jump like and touch the ceiling. No problem. Suddenly we can jump like anything. So we can see what motivates us. We are poor in motivation. That we notice. We're poor in motivation. We're lacking in motivation. So the key to strengthening that motivation is hearing or getting more knowledge about Krishna. By hearing more and more about Krishna, actually we change. Our whole mood will change. Therefore, this movement is based on hearing about Krishna And then chanting about Krishna. And then remembering comes. And then suddenly our service attitude is increasing. And we'll just get more and more desire to make a sacrifice for Krishna. And then we make that sacrifice stronger and stronger. And in this way, it continues. Because in devotional service, every day we start on zero. Right? Every day, again. Every day we have to do it again. You can't say I did 64 rounds yesterday and therefore the next 4 days I don't have to chant. I did it all on Sunday. Yes, I'll start again on Thursday. No, I can't say. It's even if you did 64, still you have to do a minimum of 16 again today. So, like this, every day again we have to make the sacrifice. Sankhya purvaka nama gana natibi. It has to be done in a regulated way, again and again, sacrifice. So it's not just a one-time sacrifice, but it is a regular sacrifice. Therefore, the key in sacrifice for Krishna is to take responsibility. Responsibility is a word we don't like. Kartavya, duty. I'm allergic to that. No, responsibility, taking responsibility for Krishna means we make a regular sacrifice. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada designed these temples so that we could take responsibility, that we could become involved. Say, I take responsibility for this and this service. And that is actually the key, that is the secret. By taking responsibility in devotional service, taking responsibility for hearing, taking responsibility in our arms. That is the key to make the change. To go through the taste barrier. Right? You know, that's like the sound barrier and we have the taste barrier. Very difficult to go through the taste barrier. If only I would have taste. Oh, that taste will come if we make the sacrifice. Like that. By taking responsibility. To be there in Mangalarti. Why not? Some people do. They come every day from outside. Some come every day. They live outside. They come. How do they do it? I don't know, but they do it. How to do it? By doing it. You know the t-shirt, right? That's right. Just. That's right. Yes, Bhakta Nike. Bhakta Nike, or Nike, whatever way you say it. Bhakta Nike. Yes. So, of course, I'm not hitting you, this is the conclusion now. I'm not trying to hit you over the head with a danda, because I'm also myself going through the same struggle. I'm going through the same struggle. Because I also took birth in this age of Kali. I also had come down to the animal platform in my life. I also, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, came to the human platform. Otherwise I didn't even know what it was. Although I used to think of myself as being very, very civilized. But through Prabhupada's mercy, I realized that actually I was an animal and that by his kindness I came to the human platform only. So, I myself am struggling as much as any of you. But I've always thought that if you are a strong devotee, then maybe you don't need to come to Mangalartik every day. But if you're a weak devotee, then you need. If you're a strong devotee, then you'll naturally have love for Krishna. That's a strong devotee. Then it doesn't matter what time you get up. But if you're a weak devotee, then the only way is to get up early to be there. So everyone in his own life has to make some arrangement of sacrifice. Maybe it's not practical for everyone to come to Mangalarti. But you have to explain it to Krishna. Krishna, it's really not practical for me. I know I should be going, but I really can't because I live 60 kilometers away from the temple and it's a little difficult to drive all the way there. I'd be too late for work. And so please allow me to do something at home. But we have to be responsible for Krishna, to follow the standards that his pure devotee has set. And it's not only for those who live in the temple, it's for all of us, that responsibility. So with that, on this early morning, I leave you to digest all that before breakfast. I know it's a bit heavy on the stomach, but it is very nice actually, because if we do this, then this Krishna consciousness will become very, very blissful. Very blissful. So maybe some question or comments. Yes?
How can we be motivated in some service but not in others? And how can we have the mood of a personal attendant in services that are not directly related to the deity?
Mm-hmm.
For example.
Okay, so two questions actually. First of all, how come we feel more motivated in one service than in another? That is because we are conditioned souls. And it means that we are not doing the service 100% for Krishna. We're also doing the service for ourselves. So we say, I like this service, I don't like that service. So it's about my liking, not about Krishna's liking. And then the second question related, of course, is how can we be in the mood of a personal attendant when we're doing another service than directly serving the deity? Well, indirectly serving the deity, yes, it's easy because we are doing personal service. But the mood of personal attendant in other service than serving the deity is to do the needful for Krishna, what Krishna needs, not what I like. Not the serve. I like to do this and this service, and not so much the other service. No, to do the needful. To do the needful. Of course, everyone is limited, and you cannot solve every problem, and you cannot do anything. But it means to be a surrendered soul, really. It means to accept whatever service comes our way, and to do it nicely, and to say this is great, and to end gratefully, to say, you know, not just do it externally very nicely, but internally hating it, but also internally actually saying, thank you very much, Krishna, for allowing me to do this service. It's your mercy upon me, even if it's difficult for me. This is my purification. Yeah. Like that, we can be honest. You know, when it's difficult for us, we can say, dear Lord, I find it really difficult, this service, but thank you very much for allowing me to do it. For a purification. Anyone else? All right. Then,
just a comment. When Prabhupada was here,
you want the mic? Maybe it's a bit of this one. It's a portable job.
When Srila Prabhupada was here in 1976, he was asked a question, why is it that only young people are here? Why not some older people attending your classes? Prabhupada said, because they are old fools. I talked to Amir about this recently. In this one, we see that our disciples of Prabhupada, of course, they're becoming older now. But generally when we have meetings, we said we have a meeting this morning, most of the people in here are young.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like that situation hasn't changed.
Okay.
Is it possible for us to change that? Is there something we can do different, or is that just the fact of life that young people are open to spiritual life but old people are closed to that?
Mm-hmm.
Another just a side comment. When I joined the temple, we had a devotee in the temple, Sanjata. He was 55 years old, which is my age now. And we thought that was quite an oldie to have an older person.
You're also quite an oldie. You also look like quite an oldie now.
Yeah, unfortunately. I'm associated with this in February, though. I still think I'm 30 years old. That's how illusion works. I think you might like to make a comment. The time for learning, of course, is youth. And, but it seems hard to. But we have a few older people who attend our services, but mostly young people.
First, in general, about the general public, Srila Prabhupada also on one occasion when that question was asked by a journalist said that that a magnet attracts iron. He said, but when that iron is covered by rust, then it will not be attracted by the magnets. So he said, old people, they're covered by rust. They have performed so many sinful activities that in their life that now they've been covered and therefore they're not attracted. He said, young people are still more innocent. Although they may have sinful inclinations, they haven't become so deeply rooted in that behavior yet. Therefore, they're more easily attracted. That was one point Prabhupada made. As far as older devotees who are not coming now, that can have many different reasons. There's also a lot of history. I mean, this movement is an ancient movement that came from India. It is the Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then brought it in its more modern form. And then we got like a transplant from east to west by Srila Prabhupada. And that, of course, was a big thing. You know, suddenly Prabhupada was trying to make all these Western people into devotees. And he did that with love and care. Sometimes he was strict, sometimes he was kind, sometimes he was lenient, and he did that in a very personal way. Then after Prabhupada left, then his disciples were still young, and also the leading disciples, the leaders, were still young. So suddenly, from the hands of a very deep, realized personality, who was full of love for Krishna and all Krishna's creation, and who was also very wise and experienced in life, and who knew how to deal with people. Suddenly it went into the hands of young men below 30, and they took charge of the movement. So naturally, they were not as experts, so they made it a little difficult. Quite a large number of Prabhupada's disciples couldn't deal with that. It was too much for them, the change, and they withdrew a little bit. They stayed home and said, okay, we'll live outside and we'll help, but we cannot live in the temples because it's the leadership is not so mature. Now with time, things have developed again, because now, from 1977, we have moved on. And so now, slowly, our movement is maturing, slowly, little by little. And little by little we begin to understand how important it is that we are a family, and how important it is that we have good relationships amongst the devotees. Because everything, we cannot live on philosophy alone. We won't survive. It's a very, very rare person that will live on a philosophical conviction if he's not happy with the people he's with. So it's very important that we have very nice dealings with each other. Very important. That will make all the difference. In that regard, since I'm telling stories and I never come to Australia, so I take a little extra time, it doesn't matter because I have to put it all in one visit, so you don't mind. This is a story about a Christian monastery, a Catholic monastery. And as you know, the Catholics, they have huge buildings and they're completely empty, and inside are only old people, a few old monks. Just like in Adelaide, we bought one of those as our temple. And so there were only a few monks in this monastery left, and yeah, one was dying after the other, so they're just waiting, and they knew in a few years we'll be extinct. A few more years and there just will be none left, that will be it. And then this monastery will be finished. And they were like this. So one day a rabbi came to visit. And they asked the rabbi, they said, you know, we have this situation where just young people of today are just not interested anymore in spiritual life. It's just like that. The youth of today is materialistic. They don't care about these spiritual things anymore. So nobody is joining our monastery. And I said, would you have a solution? The rabbi said, no, I don't have a solution. We have the same problem. He said, we have the same problem. Nobody in our synagogues is just joining anymore. Only old people. That's it. What to do? So both were looking at each other, what to do. So, but the rabbi said, but actually, you see, I came for another reason. He said, the reason why I came is because some elders in our synagogue, some very wise men, they have concluded that the Messiah, who is supposed to return again, right, is actually already here on this earth. And that he lives right now in your monastery. Wow, that was news. You know, that was amazing. The rabbi left, but the monks had something to talk about. He said, that's amazing. We never knew it. The Messiah lives in our monastery. That's something else. Everyone was thinking about it, and everyone was thinking, well, I don't know who it is. I don't know. It could be anybody, really. Only one thing I know for sure. It's not me. Thus, from that day on, everyone began to deal with everyone else in a very nice way, because you don't, it's like, you know, when he manifests himself, I don't want to be on the wrong side, you know. So the relationships improved tremendously. And then one day a group of students from the university came to visit the monastery, and they thought, such a nice atmosphere in this place, so nice, that some of the students actually left university and joined the monastery. And within a few years, there were 20 new monks, and the whole monastery was flourishing. So if we want people to stay in our movement, we can never take them for granted. There's not one person in this room that we can take for granted and think he's sold out to the Hare Krishna movement. Right? We cannot think like that. As soon as we think that someone is sold out and we take them for granted, we have to conquer the devotees. And it's everybody's duty to make everybody feel totally welcome. And if we do all that together, then we'll get an amazing atmosphere in the temple. And then nobody will leave. And before you know it, we'll all grow old and so on. And then many new people will still join because it's such an amazing atmosphere. And then we need to buy more buildings in the street until all of Deng Street is ours. And then we'll go for Albert Park. Why not? Yeah, like this. So it's all about relationships. And it's there where it broke down. When things were taken for granted, that's where it didn't work. And that's where people didn't stay. And that's why ISKCON is sometimes known as a revolving door. Yeah. They say ISKCON is a revolving door. Yes, people come in and then out again. Yeah. Yes. Others say this movement is always young. It means that there's always new people. But where are the old ones? It is up to us to make sure that everybody stays. That we take care of everyone. That's everyone's responsibility. Oh, talking about responsibility, that's a big responsibility, to look after everybody else, to be the servant of the servants. Stop with that. because it's time for breakfast and I'm hungry.
Thank you very much.
Srila Prabhupada.
Jai.